You've been waiting for this since February 6th. Football season is almost here, and there's no better way to get closer to the game you love than with DraftKings 1 Week Fantasy Football. To celebrate, DraftKings is hosting a $100,000 contest that is totally free to enter. Free is pretty cheap, right, Trent?
Cheap as it gets.
And if you draft the perfect lineup, you can win $1 billion. $1 billion. That's an absurd amount of money. You got to draft the perfect lineup, and you can win it with DraftKings. There are many ways to play. Choose between public contests with big cash prizes or private contests where you can compete against a group of your buddies. DraftKings also has beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of similar skill level. The best part is you get to draft a new team each week without any commitment. So go to DraftKings.com now. Use the promo code FOR, that's F-O-R-E, to play in DraftKings' free Week 1 contest with $100,000 in total prizes. And again, if you draft the perfect lineup, you can win $1 billion. That's promo code FOR, F-O-R-E, to play for your shot to win $1 billion Week 1. The contest is totally free to enter. Why would you not try? You'd be crazy. DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Crazy weekend. We had two of the biggest stars in the game, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, in a playoff. Glen Oaks, which we talked about a good amount last week because we were lucky enough to play out there about a month ago. We went Friday all afternoon. What'd you think of the event there, Trent Daddy?
I thought it was great. I mean, going to Glen Oaks, going to the event was cool. I met up with our pal Eric, I believe, is our friend out there. Dave and Eric are cool guys. Me and you, we putzed around the course. We saw Rory, we saw Spieth, we saw Phil. We drank a few transfusions, watched a bunch of the play. It looked magnificent. The course was in perfect condition.
Yeah, it really pops, as they say. You know, it's everyone kept dropping the Augusta.
Yeah, I saw
where it's green and where the bunkers are white and they're, you know, the edges are sharply cut and the fairways blend together in a lot of different spots. So it's cool. It's a cool looking course there. I think it's Craig Currier. Is that the guy's name? That's the, the greenskeeper up there, the superintendent. I think he was at Augusta for a couple of years, and then he was brought in to get Bethpage Black ready for the 02 and 09 U.S. Opens. And he was the one that got Glen Oaks kind of going in the direction that it got into and ultimately that we saw this weekend. And, It was an awesome course. There was a couple people today have been talking about the 18th hole, which we saw a lot because they went right back to it in the playoff yesterday. Mm-hmm. DJ hit his 341-yard drive over the water on a line that nobody else was taking.
Friend of the program, Kevin Kisner, had some choice words for the 18th
hole. Kis said worst hole ever.
Worst hole ever.
Which is a very funny little comment. I can't tell if he was being a little bit playful because he bogeyed it, I think, 3 of the 4 days, and he was just kind of being like, oh, worst hole ever because I didn't play it well, or if he actually, like, hates that fucking hole.
If I know Kevin Kisner, I want to say there's a little bit of playful tone in him, but I feel like he's got an edge, so it could be, right, I mean, it could be either one.
Yeah, so we, after play on Friday, you know, we followed Kis. He was one of the last groups off. Kisner, in a little over a week, has kind of gone from, you know, a guy that was in the mix a good amount and has had a really good year, but we didn't know much about, to maybe my favorite guy on tour.
He was so cool on Friday when we were at the course. Well, first of all, we ran into a little bit of a stoolie police officer who took us to an area, basically the family area of the course. We waited around and then hung out with Kis for, how long do you think we were back there? 20, 25 minutes?
Something like that, yeah.
Shooting the shit with Kisner. He is just like you and I. And probably every one of our listeners, he just happens to be extremely good at golf. We shot the shit about normal things for a half hour.
He was hilarious. His little even observations of, like, the crowd and shit that happens out there he's just a normal dude who's significantly better at golf than we are.
Yes.
But shout out to all the listeners, too. I got a text from Kis, I think Tuesday during the practice round. He texted me like, holy shit, you guys have a hell of a volley, huh? I was like, what are you talking about? Like, everybody's yelling at me about the podcast. Like, every hole I go to, everywhere I walk. So the Platrons were bringing it this week. These guys are up in our neck of the woods, the Northeast. We got TBC Boston this weekend. So let them hear it again out there. But yeah, Trent and I, like you said, this cop who knew who we were and was running the show on like the family area kind of drags us in to the point where, like, you know, we were excited to say hi to kids just like we were when we met Keegan, because like, who the fuck are Riggs and Trent? Like, why are we meeting, and why do these people care about us at all? And we went even deeper than I thought we would ever go this time, where we were standing next to, you know, like wags that we recognized and stuff. People, well, like, if someone, it was like when you're at, like, in Wedding Crashers, when they're like,
yes,
who do you know? We were going to be like, I texted Kiss once.
Well, it was funny because back to the Stooley cop, where he was like, yeah, I'll help you guys out, but I got to watch Spieth finish up. Like, we were standing on 18. We're like, we need to go. We want to go talk to Kevin Kisner a little bit. Is that at all possible? He's like, yeah, I can take you wherever you want, but we got to wait for Spieth to finish up. I'm not going to take you yahoos anywhere until I watch that happen.
Which I was like, we just stood there like, touche, dude.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so once we got there, we are actually in the back area where the families hang out and all that. And me and you just hanging there like idiots. And here comes Kisner, big old lipper in his mouth and just ready to shoot the shit. It was great.
Like, what's up, boys? There were like 800 kids like trying to lean over a fence that we just blew right past the fence.
You just reminded me of something that was the funniest part of the day for me. We're standing there. A couple of the kids make their way back there. I don't know if they're, you know, kids of other golfers or if they just, you know, snuck back there. There were kids around Kevin Kisner, and he was just grabbing things and signing them. The kids weren't even asking for his signature. He was just grabbing them. And while still talking to me and Riggs, he would grab it, sign it, give it back, grab it. These kids don't want Kevin Kisner's autograph, I don't think.
It was laugh out loud funny. Like, he was doing it basically trolling them.
Yeah.
Just in the middle of a conversation without shooting the shit, saying God knows what, probably very inappropriate shit for kids, just grabbing things blindly and just throwing his signature on them and, like, stuffing them back in the kids' faces.
That guy's, those kids are going to get home and be like, I don't know who this is, and I don't
what
care
what
this.
Like, I don't, where did, how did this guy end up on my cool flag? So Kiz was great. It was a fun experience. We ended up, a couple too many vodka cranberries, because we ended up in like the tour's box, they had, it was actually maybe the coolest place on the course. There was like five different holes you could watch. It was between like 8-13, and then you could see like two more holes. I can't remember exactly which ones because I didn't study the routing that well, but they had open bar up there, which is dangerous.
Trouble.
So we were cranking a couple vodka cranberries. Many people were drink shaming me for drinking vodka cranberries.
That's crazy. I got one after you got one because I was like, that looks delicious.
I actually got shamed by a chick who was like, wow, you really like when people troll you, don't you? Like, thought that I was getting a vodka cranberry, not because it's even conceivable that someone like me would like that, but just because I like to attract trolls or something.
This has been a...
like it was a ratings
crap. I'm pretty sure it's been a... a ratings crap. I'm pretty sure this has been a KFC Radio conversation over the years where don't drink shame anybody. We're all drinking. We're all going to get drunk. Like, who cares if it's a Bud Heavy or a vodka cranberry or a martini or whatever. We're all just heading to the same place, just in different vehicles.
And we got there. I got there same way you got there. You know, we just crushed some alcohol in the sun, out on Long Island, beautiful course, watching some golf, hanging out with kids, watching them just basically troll little kids in their face. It was great. It was lovely. So yeah, for all of you listeners up there that are going to be out in Boston, which I imagine is going to be the most that we've ever had at one event.
Yeah.
Go show kids some love. He enjoys it. He was pretty pumped. He's like, wow, people actually like me now. That's sweet.
Yep.
So yeah, kids is the man. The tournament was, It was a wild, wild finish. You really, you know, we always try to talk about rivalries. We always try to pit golfer against golfer, but very rarely do we actually get in golf, for whatever reason, you know, two big heavyweights slugging it out to win an event. And we had DJ and Spieth go to a damn playoffs. I mean,
First, it wasn't supposed to be that way, because through five holes on Sunday, Spieth had a five-shot lead. So you're thinking, all right, this is going to be the most – like, it looks – the final group looks very appealing because it's Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth. But then you realize the stroke difference, and you're like, all right, it's going to be kind of boring. And then I believe Spieth doubled six. So then you're down to three shots with a lot of golf left, and, you know, we got to a playoff.
Yeah, and you're thinking Spieth's going to play boring golf, middle of the green, you know, middle of fairway, middle of greens, and close this thing out, win by three or four, no problem. Nope. Got really interesting down the stretch. Obviously, Deej made that par putt, I think 17-footer on the 72nd hole. I think very underrated was Spieth's putt on 17.
Right.
He made like a 12 or 15-footer for par.
Huge, just barely lipped in.
Barely lipped in. Very similar to DJ's. Those ball, I mean, I feel like both of those putts should have lipped out in a normal situation, but because this was like down the stretch, maybe the tour's got some sort of Dave Portnoy-type deal with the devil.
I would believe it.
Where those fuckers lipped right in there.
I believe it.
It was very exciting to see. It was really interesting watching him come up the 72nd hole. I thought when DJ was, 170 or 180 out and he laid up. I mean, he's one of the biggest hitters on the planet, and you saw his ball just dribble into the rough. The rough was gnarly.
Yeah, you saw it. It just kind of dribbled off just barely, and it disappeared.
Disappeared
completely. So yeah, that was why the layup happened. But yeah, that rough was no joke.
One of those where you're watching the ball roll, and then when it goes into that, everybody audibly gasps like,
yeah.
"Ooh, oh shit!"
Well, and then I don't think people maybe in the crowd at the actual course realized how bad the rough was, because when DJ laid up, you would have thought like some lady fainted in the crowd. Like, there was such a reaction to be like, there's Dustin Johnson, one of the longest hitters on tour, and he just laid up. Like, what is going on? But it was because the rough was so bad.
Yeah, and getting to play these courses is an unbelievably cool little privilege that we get from doing the podcast. So everybody out there, you should go start a golf podcast. But
don't do that.
This was one of the cases where, having played the hole and been there before DJ laid up, I thought, like, I don't think he can go for it here, because it was on a downslope in that thick rough to a seriously elevated green where you can't go over the green. If you go over, you're dead. You're fucked.
Yep.
And so he, even if he lands it on the green, it's gonna carry him over the green. So I actually thought, like, wow, it's 180. He might lay this up. And then when he did, and the people I was watching with were kind of like, holy shit, he laid up there. And I was like, a little insider knowledge here.
No big deal.
And I gave him that whole explanation I just gave you, where it really sounds like you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So then when he got up and down, I was like, God, I called that. I'm sweet.
You did.
I fucking nailed it.
Took a hell of a putt on 18.
Oh, that was awesome. Didn't you feel like he was going to make it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I feel that way with, like, on Spieth on 17, I thought he was going to make it. And then it's one of those things you kind of alluded to earlier where the stars don't align all that often when you get two heavyweight guys, trading punches, and we finally got that. So it did feel like the Dustin Johnson putt was going to go in. The camera crew did a good job of, they had basically the shot coming towards you, the putt goes in, you get DJ in the foreground, in the background there's Paulina. I didn't want to bring Paulina into it yet, but she was in the back going crazy. Dustin was, pretty stone-faced because that's how he is, but it was great.
Yeah, there was the one clip where it looked like she was, like, hot and bothered by, like, oh, that putt, oh.
Like, it goes in. Like, she was not expecting it to go in, you can tell, and her reaction is like,
Jesus.
Felt a chill in the air.
No, that was, it was sweet. He also kind of felt like he was going to make it just because, like, he played the whole, like, smartly, right? You're like, oh, he laid up on purpose to a good wedge distance, and then he hit a decent wedge shot. Oh, he's definitely going to make it because this is just how it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
And then he made it, and then the playoff was interesting. Spieth goes first, hits his little hits a less than aggressive line out to the right. DJ obviously hits his, over the water. Everyone's going nuts. Bananas.
The shot tracker, those two side by side, KFC tweeted one of them.
Yep.
So unbelievable.
That was a really
incredible.
Good image. People were doing I think it's like Shot Link on PGA Tour's app, where they do the line from the bird's eye view of, like, where their balls actually went and ended up.
Yeah.
Was a really funny difference.
Well, and you had said, you read that Spieth knew he was screwed.
So Spieth, really interesting article that I found on Golf Channel. Shout out to our guy, Peter Jacobson, Golf Channel guy, no big deal, representing, respecting the biz. Spieth basically talked at length, being like, as soon as I hit my tee shot on 18, I regretted the line that I took, and I knew, he was like, I actually was hoping that DJ was not going to realize, like,
because the wind just shifted.
Right. He had said when they played the whole 15-20 minutes earlier, the wind had been a little bit in the face, and Spieth's like, right when I teed off, I realized it was downwind, and it's actually, like, it's harder to hold the fairway the more right you go.
Yep.
DJ can't even hold the fairway if he goes, because he hits it too far. So Spieth kind of said, he knew, like, I'm in trouble off the tee, because like, the wind had switched.
A rare mistake from the normally pretty cerebral Jordan Spieth.
Yes. And and it was, it was a 300-yard carry, I think, over that water on the left. But again, if it's downwind and it's firm, if you can just get the ball, basically a yard over that water, it's going to bounce all the way into the fairway and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to hear him kind of talk about that and talk about, his thoughts in the playoff.
You tweeted something interesting that I wanted to bring up, where you said this was one of the, there's a lot of talk around the tour about long hitters and how that's affecting what course should be playing, how long they're going to be, how long they should be. You said this was a clear example of someone who can bomb it, having a clear advantage over a guy like Spieth, who doesn't have, obviously, has the putter, he has a short game, but he can't drive it as far. What exactly did you mean by that?
Yeah, because, you know, there's this frequent discussion about people love to say, like, oh, well, you know, who's better, right? They go, like, is it Rory? Is it DJ? Is it Spieth? Is it Jason Day? Like, who is the best player? Whose game is the best? People always love to boil it down to, well, when they have their A game, who would you take? And I always think that's the dumbest thing in the world, because no player ever plays a golf tournament for four rounds with their A game.
Yep.
That's not even what golf's about. Golf's about, you know, consistency, managing the misses, getting the ball. You know, we always say, like, who's just the best at getting the ball in the hole when you talk about Spieth, which literally is fucking golf. So people love to talk about that, and I love to defend Spieth in that, like, no, he's got it figured out in that way where he you know, people love to talk about he doesn't hit the bar as far as the DJs and the Rorys and all of that. And that quality to Spieth's game is what is going to separate him over a 25, 30-year PGA Tour career from the other guys, where, you know, who knows what those exact numbers are going to be, but he's going to win more majors, and he's going to have kind of this iconic career where he emerges from the pack. However, I thought that in the playoff yesterday, and who knows, you know, this was before I knew that Spieth, like, thought he could take the other line,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, that does change it a little bit.
But that was a very clear example where it was like, you know, DJ's length there. I mean, he had a fucking flip wedge in and hits it to 3 or 4 feet.
It was ridiculous.
And Spieth's got kind of this, you know, this downhill lie type, like, mid-iron into that green that's a really hard green to hit. And it, you know, it lands and kind of bounces towards the back of the green. He has to lag one up there. So I thought that was a very rare case that actually kind of goes against what I love to defend and talk about Spieth's game, where the distance, yeah, like, blatantly was just a huge advantage,
yeah,
right there.
So you think everything's going to be fine? Like, that's basically...
Oh, totally.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I thought that it was cool to kind of say, like, no, this, like, the fact that DJ can hit it that much further is not necessarily always a huge advantage, because, I think that Spieth has figured it out better than everybody else, like, how to manage four rounds of golf and how to, you know, use his iron play and his putting to his advantage and all this. But that was where it was like, oh, fuck, like, Jesus
there's
Christ.
There's clear example of, like, those back-to-backs, like, oh. And it does make a difference that Spieth, it sounds like he thinks he could have made the same sort of shot if he had realized the wins and all that. But that was a clear example where if you can just dump on the ball, like Dustin Johnson can, you have a advantage.
And it was, you know, proof that that was the common reaction by, you know, kind of how viral that screen grab trajectories is. Everyone was just like looking at that like, whoa.
The reason it goes viral is because it's very tangible.
Yeah.
Because those pictures of the shot tracker that you can see, people can say, hey, look at that, when there's a lot more context and conversation to have around it. But it's easy for someone from the outside to be like, see, the guys who hit it further are going to win every single time, when Spieth has been proving that wrong, you know, his whole career.
Right. And it was really interesting too, because I think somebody's the stat was that DJ only carried his ball 26 yards further than Spieth did,
mm-hmm,
but they had, I think, an 80-yard difference in their approach distances.
Yeah.
So that kind of speaks to it where, like, no, Spieth can move the ball out there and stuff. It's just, like, you know, that line, and it all added to it. And you know, we've had some chatter again about whether that hole stinks or not. Our boy Ian Poulter really chimed in.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. He chimed in big time and was like, basically, it was like, Spieth got fucked because this hole sucks, but congratulations, DJ.
That's very Poulter.
It was super Poulter.
That's very Poulter. We did see Poulter walking around on Friday while we were out there. A lot taller than I thought he was going to be.
Yes.
Not, he's all legs, but he's just a lot taller than I thought he was going
to
be.
Yes. I also realized that I'm just all talk, because when you get to these tournaments, like, if Poulter came up to me when we were in the fucking family area with kids trolling kids and stuff,
yeah,
that I would have been like, hey, man, really nice to meet you, like, 100%.
You know, you want to stand on the hard line, and it's exactly what you're saying. I want to be like, if Poulter came up to me in that family area, I'd be like, fuck you, you're the worst, I make fun of you all the time. It doesn't feel that way when you're back there. I'm not saying I wouldn't, but you do get the feeling where it's like, oh, I'm back here right now. It's kind of strange.
I would love to say that I'd be the total badass that sticks to my guns, but I'd probably take off my shirt. Yeah, can you, like, sign my chest, please? Thank you so much.
Oh, gross.
So,
but great finish.
Great finish.
Great finish. DJ and Spieth just going at it. You got the number one guy in the world, the number three guy in the world, FedEx Cup, playoff hole. That's what you want with golf.
This is also big for me as a guy that came out last week as a huge pro FedEx Cup playoffs guy.
Huge.
And then we get a hot start like this.
Huge.
I fucking love the FedEx Cup playoffs. I just love them. We talk about that with Peter Jacobson as well. We get really into it. Okay, moving on. You just mentioned Tiger Woods. We got Tiger Woods announced as an assistant captain for this year's President's Cup.
I've seen a couple outlets putting comeback in quotes with this, like, announcement that he's going to be an assistant captain at the President's Cup. That's where we're at.
That's the opposite of a comeback. That is, and the reason I really wanted to talk about this briefly is I am very adverse to a world where Tiger Woods is like this fucking, like, wise grandfather figure that serves as, like, an assistant captain and, like, a leader. No, I want him to be a fucking all-star. I don't want him to be, like, brought in as this guy with all this experience that he's going to share with the younger guys because his career's over and he's dead and he's getting DUIs and his dick's everywhere and he fucking he can't walk for 5 minutes straight without breaking his back and needing surgery. And I don't like that.
Yeah, I want him. He's eventually going to be that Yoda-like figure where he is he's the captain. He's all this. He's that. It's just too early. There's too much golf supposedly left in that body for him to already be in this. What is he? He's 41, 42?
Yes, I think he's 41.
We're like 10 years early on it. And I know his body sucks. I know his knee sucks. I know his dick's huge. But it's just too early for this type of – for it to be making headlines where, like, Tiger is – an assistant captain. Let's all get excited about it. It's very depressing.
Like, if he shows up at Liberty National with, like, a long gray goatee, I might kill myself.
Well, and the problem is it gets him his fix of, I miss the boys. I want to, you know, be with the boys. I want to joke around. I want to tap nutsacks. I want to do all that. But he doesn't have to do any of the playing, and I'm afraid he's going to start liking it. To the point where he's just like, you know what, I've got my 14 majors, I've got a bazillion PGA Tour wins. Maybe I don't need to do this again.
The one saving grace that I take away from that is I remember the story, the anecdote from around this time last year, maybe a little later in the year, when Rory said that Tiger texts him at like 4 a.m. from the gym being like, I'm working out, what are you doing? So I still think he's got some of that in him where he's like, I'm fucking coming for that ass.
Well,
PGA Tour guys.
Historically, I mean, he's obviously the biggest killer of all time. He's, you know, slit your throat, rip your guts out type of guy. So you think somewhere in there is still the competitive edge, but he really does seem to be kind of liking this chill out.
Like, a little part of Riggsy thinks that he goes to the President's Cup just so that he can, like, take notes on the players, like, before he goes to sleep on their weaknesses and, like, what he can expose when he runs into them in a major championship in 2 years.
I like this. You're very woke on assistant captain Tiger.
I refuse to give up on real Tiger.
I refuse
to accept Yoda Tiger. Fuck Yoda Tiger.
Yoda Tiger will be sweet, but not now.
Yeah, when he's like 70, not when he's fucking 41.
I agree with you. It's sad, but maybe this is just one of many steps for him to regain some sort of dominance.
I saw Michelle Wiese hurt or something. What happened? She had surgery?
She had to pull out of the tournament she was playing in. She had an emergency appendectomy.
Ooh.
She had to get her appendix removed.
Okay.
My brother, I could have said that the first time.
Yeah.
My brother had this. He said it was the worst pain he's ever had in his
life. Yeah, I heard it's like the worst thing in the world. It's like excruciating pain. Like, you feel like your insides are like dying.
Can you like preempt this? Can you like have your, could I have my appendix removed right now so I don't have to like, because here's the thing. What happens apparently is it
good
like
question.
Comes to the point where it's going to burst. So you have to get it out of you before it ruptures. Why can't I just have my appendix, like you get your tonsils out. Why can't I get my appendix removed?
I just had a sad moment where I looked towards where Sunshine would usually be to ask him if he knew if you can get your appendix. Sunshine's gone.
It's Radio Brendan. I don't know if his mic is on.
We got Radio Brendan now in for Sunshine.
He's a very nice guy, but yeah, no Sunshine.
Yeah, poor Sunshine. RIP Sunshine.
So yeah, Michelle Wiese, she is recovering, said she's going to take at least the next two events off, and you know, we hang out with her a couple weeks ago. And then she basically almost dies.
That's a foreplay curse. It's fucking getting dangerous out there.
You know, it can put Kevin Kisner on the top of the leaderboard through seven holes on the first day, but then it can also almost kill one of the most popular female golfers in the world.
Yeah, we have had an interesting stretch with the foreplay bump that we like to call it when they're doing well, where guys start off tournaments hot, like Willie Wilcox did it one time.
Ollie almost won the other day.
But I feel like they never like win.
I don't know if that's what that is.
We had Wesley Bryan win, but even like Kiz, you know, he's 4 under through 9 or whatever, and he's like leading the tournament, and he finished 2 or 3 over for the tournament, like wasn't in the mix. So we're going to have to tweak that a little bit. All right, coming up next, we've got our interview with Peter Jacobson of Golf Channel. Like we said, he's going to be covering a lot of the events, pretty much all the events over the next month. So enjoy this chat with Peter Jacobson.
This interview with Peter Jacobson is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice. Get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door. It's an awesome life hack and a no-brainer choice. You no longer have to schlep to the store to buy a cheap disposable razor that can give you a cheap shave, or spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech you don't need. And when I use my Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor with their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, the blade just gently glides, giving me such a smooth shave. Their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter is transparent for a more precise shave, helps prevent ingrown hairs, and fights razor bumps. You too can make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors just a few bucks a month. That's a $15 value for only $5. In your first month box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their Shave Butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There are no hidden fees and no commitments. Cancel anytime you like. You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/4, F-O-R-E. That's dollarshaveclub.com/4, F-O-R-E. Go get your razors.
We are now joined by Peter Jacobson. For those of you that don't know, he is, of course, a tower analyst for NBC Sports' coverage of the PGA Tour. Going to be a big part of the coverage for the remainder of the FedEx Cup playoffs. We got the Dell Technologies Championship, the B&W, of course, the Tour Championship. Also going to be a big part of the President's Cup coming up at the end of the month, which we're all pumped about. You can find him this weekend. He'll be out at TPC Boston Friday, Saturday on Golf Channel, Sunday and Monday on NBC. Mr. Jacobson, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys today?
We're doing really well. We did just put you on hold, so we very much apologize for that. That's our bad.
It's okay. I've had to wait on the tee for groups ahead of me many times.
Yeah, we were. We were doing a little slow play test for you right there. So let's just kind of hop right into some tour talk. We had a very exciting day, of course, yesterday out on Long Island, which is up in our neck of the woods. Two of the game's bigger stars coming down, hitting some great shots, getting into a playoff. First of all, just kind of what did you think about, you know, the new venue, Glen Oaks, and kind of what it looked like and how it played?
Well, I know Glen Oaks is a very difficult golf course. In fact, a couple of the players that I talked to were mentioning how long and difficult it was. And I know a lot of the players complain about difficulty of a golf course, whether it's too long or too tight or too short or the greens are too fast. In my opinion, it really doesn't matter because everyone has to play the same golf course. And as you saw last weekend with the playoff with Dustin and Spieth, the cream did rise to the top. The leaderboard on the weekend was incredible. And when I watched the finish of that, I was blown away by how great the golf was and how the drama, which is exactly what the PGA Tour and the FedEx Cup is all about, creating the drama in the playoffs. And when you've got Dustin Johnson make a long putt on 18 to get into the playoff and then hit that huge drive on the first extra hole and birdie to win. It was just, I loved it. I'm a golf fan first and foremost. I played the tour and still play on the Champions Tour, and I do TV for Golf Channel and NBC, but first and foremost, I'm a golf fan. So that really appealed to my love of the game.
Yeah, I was going to ask you because, you know, guys like us, we're just, Trent and I come at it from a very much a fan's point of view. You know, U.S. Opens, we like to see carnage and we like to see the big names. And we always, you know, kind of wonder if from a network's point of view and somebody like you who does cover golf professionally, you know, on that side of it, is it that much extra? I mean, are you guys that much pumped up when you do get big names battling down the stretch like DJ and Spieth and they end up in a playoff? I feel like that's got to be a huge boost.
Oh, absolutely. Well, let me just say this. First of all, I'm right there with you. I'm a golf fan, first and foremost. But when I played the tour, when I played in these major championships, I wanted to play my best, and I wanted the other guys to play their best because you don't really want to see you mentioned golf fans like to see carnage and bogeys and double bogeys. I hate to see that because that's bad golf. Right. I don't like to see bad golf. Yeah, heavy rough, shots going haywire because of coming out of heavy rough. Well, if you drive it in the rough and you hit it in the bunker and you miss putts and stuff, you deserve bogeys. But if you're hitting great shots and making birdies, you're really performing. But yeah, I think from a network standpoint, next week when I'll be at the Dell Technologies up in TPC Norton. I think the most important thing is as we continue to move toward the FedEx Cup Championship and the Tour Championship, what we want to see are the best players playing their best. And we certainly saw that this week at the Northern Trust. It was amazing. As I said, the leaderboard was incredible.
Yeah, how successful do you feel the FedEx Cup has been? It's been, you know, about a decade now, and I know that when it first kicked off, to me, it kind of, you know, it felt, okay, they're throwing a ton of money at this. This is a little bit contrived. Now that we're this far into it, we've gotten the drama, you know, that we got with DJ and Rory at the end last year, and then the first event this year with the, you know, DJ again, another huge name in Spieth. I feel like, and I've talked about on the show, that I buy into the FedEx Cup playoffs. I love them. From your point of view, you know, what are your thoughts on where the FedEx Cup playoffs are at?
Yeah, I agree with you. When it first came out, I was at the tail end of my tour career, and I really didn't understand it. And I think they had to mess around with the points system for probably 5 or 6 years until they got it right. But at the very end of the whole idea, what we're trying to do is determine the best player. And once you start the season last fall, we've got the wraparound season now. We start in October, and we end in at the end of September. I think it builds to the end, and I think it's been very successful for not only the PGA Tour and the playoffs, but for FedEx as well. I mean, FedEx is the number one company in that space. And I think being connected with such a great organization as the PGA Tour has been as good for them as it's been great for us. So all players want to play their best against the best. It doesn't matter whether it's the NBA playoffs or the Super Bowl or the World Series. You want to perform your best when you're playing against the best. And I think we see that, and we have seen that with the FedEx Cup and the playoffs. And I think we're certainly going to see it again the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I kind of said this on last week's show too. We talked about the FedEx Cup that, you know, I've lived in the Northeast now for about 10 years. I lived in Boston for 9 of those years. So going to the TPC Boston event always, you know, meant a lot to me, and I always put a lot more stake into it because I was like, oh, they're coming to my town. What, you know, just kind of being at those events, do you feel like there's kind of that vibe now at these tournaments that, you know, hey, these are a big deal and these guys really care about these events?
There's a definite buzz. Not only with the fans, because they're seeing big-time golf in the city, but there's a definite buzz amongst the players as well, because when you make it to Boston, as we see the players this week, there's going to be 100 players playing. And then the next tournament, the next week, is the BMW in Chicago at Conway Farms. That is the top 70, and then you get to the final, and it's top 30. So if you keep advancing, you know that you're playing some great golf. And what's really fun to see are players play into the FedEx Cup playoffs. Harold Varner, we saw him do an interview on Sunday where he played his way into the FedEx Cup playoffs. He played his way into the Northern Trust by finishing high at the Wyndham Championship, the last tournament of the year before the playoffs. And then I think he finished like eighth or ninth yesterday to get into the Dell Technologies. So there is a buzz amongst the players, and it isn't just the money. I know the money's huge. Everybody would love to win the money, but if you're chasing the money on the PGA Tour, it's going to be a lonely existence. You really have to chase the dream, the dream of winning a major championship, winning a Ryder Cup or President's Cup or winning the FedEx Cup playoffs. That's really what it's all about.
Yeah, and I do think it feels like the money, you know, was definitely a part of it earlier on, but I agree with you. I think now it's gotten to the point where, you know, the history, the shot of the water on 17 at East Lake and these types of things, that, you know, the money might have drawn all the guys or a good field or whatever at the beginning, but now I think that history is there, and so, I mean, it's awesome to kind of know that we've got that buzz even after the major championship season's over. So like I said, I'm always pumped for the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Well, you guys know more than I do that when you start talking about these the contracts that these NBA and NFL players sign when they make $15 and $20 million for a season,
right?
They get hurt and they sit out, they still get paid. the one thing about the PGA Tour is the money kind of pales in comparison with those huge contracts. But don't forget that if a player gets hurt and sits out, he doesn't get paid. So that's really the difference between PGA Tour golf and these other sports is there's no guaranteed contracts on the PGA Tour. You got to go out and earn the money. If you play lousy, you make nothing. If you play great, you win the big prize.
So we want to get a little bit to kind of behind the scenes as a guy that is out there, doing live TV, doing live analysis on what's going on, kind of calling the play. First of all, you're up in the tower over there. Do you have any special snacks or kind of how does Peter Jacobson prepare for the day out there?
Well, I would say that the most important thing to do is read everything that you're given. The Golf Channel and NBC has an incredible information department, and they churn out information about tournaments, players, shots, the strategy, everything you can imagine. And one thing I learned when I first started there, Gary Koch, who's a tower announcer with our team, the three tower announcers are Dan Hicks is at 18, Gary's at 17, and I'm at 16. I learned from Gary that you've got to read everything. You've got to be prepared. And I probably over-prepare because I don't want to get caught with my pants down when something happens and you really have to be on your toes. For example, what happened at the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale when Jordan Spieth hit it way to the right and he hit it over there, had to take the drop in the driving range and scrambled out a great bogey. You've got to be prepared. You've got to have some knowledge about the players, about the situation, the strategy, and the golf course to be able to do a credible job. So that's the most important thing is be prepared. Read everything. Number two, the other thing I've learned is when you're doing television, it's a visual medium. You don't have to tell the viewer. You don't have to talk nonstop. It's not radio. It's TV. So most important thing is to shut up a lot of the time when you're watching Jordan Spieth and Michael Greller talk about the shot, shut up because you want to, if the viewer wants to hear the conversation. And a lot of times when the player sets up to hit the shot and you say, this is a big putt here for birdie to take the lead. All you have to do is just stop talking because the viewer at home wants to be able to talk with his buddies. If you two are sitting there watching the golf, you don't need me going blah, blah in your ear unless I can tell you something you don't know or something you can't see. So he might have a new putter. He might have a new strategy that he talked about before the week. So there's just a lot of things that you learn. And I came right from the PGA Tour and started doing television. So it's been great for me to work with such a professional team. Our producer, Tommy Roy at NBC Sports, is so great. But I don't take too much stuff up there with me. I always have water and maybe some Diet Coke and some beef jerky snacks and nuts.
Okay.
You don't want to sit up there and get too high on candy. You don't want to sit there and eat candy all day. Then you might faint. You might pass out.
How are you with the bathroom breaks? You trying to spread those out? You said you mentioned water. You don't want to drink too much of that because you gotta hold it at some point, right?
Well, you're exactly right. In fact, at the Open Championship about a month ago at Birkdale, you really don't want to drink too much because you're up in the tower for 6, sometimes 8, sometimes 10 hours straight. So you really have to – you've got to be careful because there are no bathroom breaks. If you take a commercial, it's only 2 to 3 minutes long. So unless you can unhook, get down the tower – do your business and get back. You're in trouble.
Yeah, you don't want to get we're going to cut over to Peter on 16, and it's just you can hear your stream or something like that. That's not good.
Yeah, you don't want to go over there to 16 and have it be dead air. That's the last thing that would happen.
I'm really glad you brought up 13 at the Open because I know you talked about this a little bit with our buddy Shane Bacon, and I thought it was really interesting. What is the chatter like between those of you guys on the crew with such a long ordeal, 25, 30 minutes, whatever it ended up being, In terms of, you know, production-wise, how are we going to cover this? Who are we going to go to? Spieth, way the hell over there. What are we doing? Just talk a little bit about kind of how that goes down behind the scenes.
Well, that was my hole. The 13th hole was my hole, so I was responsible. But don't forget, I've got obviously Dan Hicks. I've got everybody on the crew that I could go to. And we had David Faraday and Roger Maltby in the fairway following Spieth and Kuchar. And Johnny and Dan are up in the tower. But everybody kind of sensed that once he hit it way to the right and he was arm waving and directing traffic and trying to get the proper line of sight for his drop, and he dropped that out on the driving range, what our job was simply to try to explain to the viewer what he was doing. He had three options. When you have an unplayable lie, you've got three options. So we explained what the three options were, and the one option that he chose was to go back as far as he could, keeping the point where his ball was between him and the hole. So we tried to explain that. We had a rules official from the RNA up there with us. But again, there was so much going on. Spieth and his caddy Michael Greller were yelling back and forth at each other, trying to get the proper line, trying to get spectators. As I said on the telecast, it looked like a UFO club standing on a hill trying to watch for different crazy lights in the sky. But they're trying to get the spectators to move left or move right. They're just trying to get the proper line. And there were officials down there, and Faraday and Maltby were down there. So we really just tried to keep everybody informed as to what was going on. But don't forget, this is where the problem lies. The groups ahead of them didn't have the problems, so they were just playing on. And I think Brooks Koepka was in the group ahead of them, and by the time they finished 13, Spieth and Kuchar finished 13, I think Koepka was on the 16th hole.
Jesus.
So because it took so long, they were, oh gosh, anywhere from maybe 2 to 2.5 holes behind. So now that causes problems with production as well. Because now when the groups finish, they're all done. There's only one group left on the course, Spieth and Kuchar, and they're on like 15 or 16. And then you couple that with the incredible comeback by Spieth. He makes that incredible bogey on 13, and then he birdies 14, eagles 15, birdies 16 and 17. One of the greatest turnarounds I've ever seen in my career in golf, playing or broadcasting.
It was unbelievable, and I'm curious, you know, once you guys, once the field sort of shrinks down in a situation like that to just two guys, you know, what are those decisions like on, you know, how much, because you want to show as much golf as possible, but then you get to a point where it's just a two-man race. You know, what are those decisions like, trying to figure out exactly how much to cover, you know, the walk in between the holes, or should we cover that, should we cover more shots even though these guys are out of it, that kind of thing?
Well, I think that obviously would be a question for the producer and the director, Tommy Randolph and Tommy Roy. But what you're trying to do is build drama, and I think there was more drama in that event with Kuchar and Spieth. When Spieth hit it way to the right, he looked like he was going to make double or triple or worse. I think everybody thought, oh, well, Kuchar's going to win this. Mm-hmm. But then when he gets it up and down for bogey, and now he's one behind, it's the greatest reset I've ever seen. When he goes to 14, it's a four-minute walk up the hill. Kuchar hits first, and then Spieth almost jars it for a hole in one, and then he makes birdie, and then he goes on that incredible run. I think that's where your broadcast team, the guys that are calling the action, Johnny Miller and Gary Koch and Maltby and Faraday, everybody on our team has so much experience that I think you depend on the knowledge of the broadcasters and their experience as players to be able to tell that story. Obviously, the viewer is watching, and the viewer makes whatever they want out of it, and it's our job to be able to explain what's going on and whether this is something we've ever seen before. And I think we all agreed we had never seen anything like that happen before. Somebody hit such a wild drive on 13 – and then come back and birdie birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie. It's just crazy.
No, it was unbelievable, and it's you know, for us, we're big social media guys, so we're always in the conversation on Twitter when those things are going on, and obviously, you know, that whole world was going crazy, and people are like, "What the hell is going on?" So I couldn't get enough of that coverage, and so to just hear about it from someone who's right there covering it is, man, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was. It was. As I said, I think it was the most incredible reset or turnaround I've ever seen in certainly in professional golf. I can't speak for all of professional sports, but it just goes to show you how special this kid is. Jordan Spieth has won three of the four major championships on his resume. He's trying to complete the career Grand Slam, and he's just one of those special characters that comes along. You think of people like Byron Nelson, Ben Hogan, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. They come along and Ben Crenshaw is another one. They just have that special touch, that special personality. They're just incredible on and off the golf course. And Spieth fits right in that category.
Yeah, and we've talked about Spieth quite a bit. Now, I wanted to get your take on kind of the you know, the star power landscape of the PGA Tour right now, because I feel like for the last few years, maybe two or three years, we've sort of built up this period, this era where maybe we've got five or six stars. You know, we've got Spieth, we've got Rory, we've got DJ. You know, you could put Jason Day, Hideki in there,
Ricky,
and it's I feel like we're gonna get to that point in the next couple of years now where somebody or maybe two guys really emerge from that pack as the guys that are going to have, you know, the phenomenal standout careers from this era. Do you think Spieth is that guy?
Yeah, I do. I think there are, to your point, we used to see only those guys from the United States. We used to just see the U.S. dominate the world stage. But what's exciting to me is to see these young superstars emerge from around the world. You look at Hideki Matsuyama from Japan. He's going to win a major. He might ascend to the number one player in the world at some time in his career. He's that good. You got Rory McIlroy from Northern Ireland. You've got Jonathan Vegas from Venezuela, who's going to be on the President's Cup team.
You got a couple Jason fist pumps from us there, because Trent's a big Rory guy, and I'm a huge Hideki Matsuyama guy.
Yeah, but these guys, I'm telling you, they're so good. I'm glad that I'm 63 years old and not starting the tour now, because I'm not sure I could compete with these guys. They are the complete package. And obviously the guys from Australia, you got Jason Day and Adam Scott, and then the guys from South Africa. Don't forget, Brandon Grace is going to be another player to keep your eye on, who could win major championships down the road. You got Louis Oosthuizen, Charles Schwartzel, and then you got Fowler and Spieth and Dustin Johnson. So I think I just named like 8 or 10 guys there that all have the ability to be number one. And what's really fantastic about it is they all push each other. They're all great friends. There's when you think back to the days of some of the players that were rivals, Norman and Faldo and maybe Tiger and Mickelson, you didn't see those guys hanging out and laughing and joking and taking spring break vacations to the Bahamas together. But you see that now with Spieth and I didn't mention Justin Thomas, what a talent he is.
There's so many guys, it's hard, you know, it's hard.
Yeah, there's probably 10 or 12 guys that could win a major championship any week. So and all you have to do is throw a dart at a dartboard, and you're going to come up with as good a name as anybody. But I think what's fun is these guys all appreciate, they not only appreciate the history of the game, and they know who Palmer and Nicklaus and Woods mean to the game of golf, but they also appreciate what each other brings to the game, that the Spieth and Justin Johnson and Fowler and Day and Adam Scott, and they push each other. So from a golf fan, a viewer standpoint, and a broadcaster standpoint, it makes it that much more special.
So we mentioned a lot of international guys in there. We've obviously got the President's Cup coming up at the end of the month, which you'll be covering. you know, the U.S. has been on a hell of a tear. What are you expecting from, you know, sort of a competitive standpoint at this year's President's Cup?
Well, it's going to be competitive. It always is. It always starts out fairly close. And then in the past, I think the depth of the United States team takes over, and we certainly have seen that. We saw that in Korea when that happened, and we've seen that in the past. Funny you mention that. I was looking through the President's Cup standings just today, just in advance of our call, and I was trying to put together some thoughts about some teams and some matchups. And I think once you get past the first five or six players on the President's Cup team for the international squad, maybe the top eight guys, I think and basically you could say that both the U.S. and the President's Cup team from one through eight are pretty comparable. They're very evenly matched. But I think where the United States takes the advantage is players 8 through 12 or 9 through 12. I think that's where you see the advantage and the depth of the United States side take over from the international side. That's not saying that the United States is going to win. Anything can happen. And that's not saying anything bad about the international team, but when you're drawing up comparisons between the Cleveland Browns and the New England Patriots, it's pretty easy. You start stacking the rosters up and you say, this guy's got an advantage here, this guy's got an advantage there. There's only 12 players per team. I understand that. And golf's a crazy game. Anything can happen. But I'm predicting a United States victory. It won't be a landslide. It'll be maybe a couple of points. But that's kind of how I see it going at this point.
Yeah, I was looking at the team earlier, and it's funny because the buildup is, you know, it sounds like, wow, the U.S., they're huge favorites. It's on home soil. But I was looking at some of these names. I mean, Hideki, Jason Day, Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, and Charles Schwartz. Like, these guys are – a lot of those guys are major champions in there. So I think it's going to be a little closer than everybody thinks.
Yeah, I agree. You got Leishman in there, Mark Leishman, who's a wonderful player, Jonathan Vegas. So you've got some guys that maybe aren't as well known as the United States team, but these guys are great. They're competitive. Leishman almost won the Open Championship a couple of years ago, and he did win the Arnold Palmer Invitational this year. And Jonathan Vegas won a couple weeks ago. So it's going to be competitive, and it's going to be great golf as usual.
So we've got you know, we just talked a little bit earlier about the Open Championship. We got Carnoustie next year. This is a little bit of a selfish question because I'm going Thursday over to Scotland for the first time in my life. Do you have any advice for someone going over to play a little links golf for the first time?
You've never been over there?
Never been over there.
No, man. It's going to be a complete shock to your system. American golf is played in the air, and I think that's one of the biggest mistakes we've made in American golf architecture. Somebody tried to bring European golf, Scottish golf, Irish golf to the United States. And when you're over in Scotland, when you're there, golf's played on the ground. You're going to see more humps and bumps and dry spots than you've ever seen on an American golf course. Well, that's how you play the shots. You've got to judge it. You hit an 8-iron from 200 yards and it lands only 160 yards and it rolls the next 40. You don't do that in the United States. So it is a completely different style of golf when you play in Europe. And I think you'll probably see that right away when you tee it up. Are you going to have caddies? Carrying your own bag?
I'm staying in St. Andrews. I'm kind of playing, you know, all the courses around there. The furthest I'm going is up to Carnoustie. But, I think for a handful of rounds, I'm playing 7 rounds in 4 days, which I'm sure all the listeners are going to be like, screw you, Riggs. But 7 rounds, 4 days, you know, I think the old course, probably Carnoustie, probably King's Barnes. I'm going to get caddies just because I feel like you need it for the full experience.
Yeah, you need a caddy because the caddies are entertainment in themselves. They'll be gambling against each other on their player. So your caddy will bet against the other caddies on you. So if you make a couple of bogeys or you miss a short putt and the caddy kind of looks at you like he hates your guts. He does.
It's because I just cost him a bunch of money.
You just cost him about $8.
Oh well, now I'm even more nervous. God damn it. All right, well, Peter Jacobson, we we really appreciate it. We've been fans for a while, and we're looking forward to the rest of the FedEx Cup.
Well, thanks for having me, guys, and it's going to be really exciting. We're off to a great start with the exciting finish with the Northern Trust, and it's only going to get better and build to the President's Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. We're pumped, and we really appreciate you taking the time. Also, we apologize for making you wait. That was our bad.
No problem. When you're over there in Scotland, just make sure you have a Guinness or two for me.
That's not a problem.
See you guys.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Peter.
That interview with Peter Jacobson was brought to you by BetDSI.com. Everybody knows I love to gamble. Everyone's always looking for some action. Hey, I want to bet on the fight, or I want to bet on the golf this weekend, or I think DJ's going to come back and beat Jordan Spieth, and I want to put some odds on it. I want to put some money on it, get some good odds. Boom, you got to go to BetDSI.com. They've been in business for over 20 years, paying winners, A-plus rated on sportsbook review sites. You can use that all that sports knowledge you build up, stick to sports. You can stick to sports and bet on it. You can do it and make some extra cash. Easy to use mobile paying playing interface, play, win, get paid. BetDSI offers odds on everything golf, including special matchups and props as games are in action. Again, there's nothing I love more than maybe on a Friday night or Saturday night, checking the leaderboard, checking the odds on BetDSI.com, picking somebody to win, and then following that horse all day Sunday. They also offer odds on everything else you can pretty much imagine, all major sporting events. Again, we were all watching the fight this past Saturday night. It's really nice to be invested and rooting for somebody. Also, I do a little bit of politics writing from time to time. You can bet on politics. You can bet on reality TV. Trent, little bachelor love there.
Let's go.
You can pretty much bet on anything you want on BetDSI.com. Use the promo code 4play25. That's F-O-R-E-P-L-A-Y 25. And you get a $25 free wager just for registering. If you decide to deposit, you will get a 200% bonus match on your money. I play there myself. Like I said, I recommend BetDSI. If you want to add a little excitement to the games, which you should, you got to go to BetDSI.com. Use the promo code 4play25, F-O-R-E-P-L-A-Y 25. Get yourself a $25 wager on the house. Also can get 200% extra bonus when you deposit. That's 4play25 to get your free wager and start winning today. Next up, we've got From the Gallery, because we are the only podcast by the Common Golfer for the Common Golfer.
It's true.
We love hearing from you folks. We love your submissions. We love all the bullshit you send us. Good news for you guys. You're no longer just making sunshine, or you're no longer making sunshine work at all. You're just making us work.
Yeah.
We love to work. It's great. It had been a while since I'd gone through From the Gallery. It's actually nice to read a lot of the people that say nice things about you.
Yep.
Yeah, people always start off with, love the show, keep up the good work.
Big time ego boost.
Which if you don't go into the email, you always basically hear the opposite.
Yeah.
So that's nice. That's real nice. Appreciate that. From the Gallery, reminder to email us, foreplay@barstoolsports.com, or hit us up on social media, Twitter, @foreplaypod, also Instagram, @foreplaypod. Hit us with your stuff, whether it's little stories you got with your buddies, whether it's questions you got about how to go about whatever you need when you play golf, little nuances, maybe little games that you play. A lot of submissions for people asking for really good competitive games outside of the norm.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's got any really good ones out there, send those in. Maybe we'll read a couple on the show. This week, we've got Hank. Hank essentially asked a couple things. He asked, one, when these pros that love to come on and talk about the Tuesday practice games or rounds of golf where they're kind of drinking beers and having some fun, basically asked, wondering if like they just bring their own beers out there if they buy them from the course. First of all, I don't think that they're drinking beers during Tuesday practice rounds of PGA Tour events.
Probably not.
I would assume when they go out and play with them with their buddies or whatnot, they're buying from the course.
Yeah, I think when we talk about Tuesday practice rounds with guys and they talk about gambling, I think people just immediately think they're drinking.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Like that has to be what it is. And I understand that connection, but they're definitely probably not drinking on Tuesday practice rounds.
Yeah, I understand the connection, but you're wrong. That's not that they're not doing that. They're just I think they gamble on Tuesday practice rounds when they're at tournaments, but I do not think that they are drinking. But that leads to another question, which was kind of a two-parter from Hank. basically asked, when you guys go play and you bring a bunch or you drink a bunch of beers with your buddies in the course, are you buying from the course or are you packing your golf bag full of a bunch of cheap light beers?
Sort of two answers to that question. I buy beer from the clubhouse enough to get a cooler, and then I stuff my bag with a bunch of very shitty light domestic beer.
That's one of the most classic moves. Very experienced move there.
Yeah, because you got, I mean, you got to keep the beers cold. And yep. You got to, you know, you start out and you give the clubhouse, you give the course some money for those first, you know, you buy six beers for like $19.
Yeah, and you kind of hoodwink them a little bit. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm totally into kind of like, you know, like helping you guys out, pumping some money into the concession, grabbing some beers from you guys. Really appreciate it. When in reality, you brought like 35 beers in your bag.
Yeah.
Your bag's like the heaviest fucking thing on planet Earth.
Have you ever been caught like sneaking beers on a course?
No.
Okay. Me either. I just wonder if that happens. Like, does the clubhouse really care if you buy your first six from them and then you've got like, you know, 25 in your bag?
No, because the people that I think actually care are not working at the clubhouse.
Agreed.
You know, like it's the people, it's going to be like the pros or the bad guys or like the chick that's, you know, the chick that's maybe the cart girl or something. Like, I don't think she gives a fuck.
No.
As long as you tip her, you know, $10 or whatever when you buy those six beers for $19, I don't think she gives a shit. So, yeah, I think that...
Is that your move as well? You buy the cooler with the six in it and then you stuff?
Yeah, or whatever they got. Sometimes they just give you one of those big bags of, like, ice. But, yeah, that's always a good one to get some ice, get a cooler, whatever the version is that they have there. But even if they don't necessarily give it to you with a bunch of, with like a cooler or with ice, sometimes they'll just hand you the beers, then I'll just get like four.
Yeah.
So that, again, it's a total like fake out situation.
Yeah. And also, once I get more drunk, I'm going to want to eat. So then that just motivates me to eat more from the clubhouse. So I'm still giving money in that way too.
True. Really good
point. I don't want to sound like we're ripping off the clubhouses here.
No, but we love clubhouses.
Yeah. Huge fan.
Pro Clubhouse Podcast. So we like to give a little bit to the pro shop, and then also we're gonna bring a shit ton of beers that we pack into our bag, like I said, to, you know, you get to that point then where you've got like, you know, like beers like breaking off your zippers on certain pockets in your bag. You're like, how many more can you fit in there, Trent? I got room in my ball. Where I keep my balls, there's like two more spots in here, and you're just stuffing beers in your bag. So we've all been there before.
Or you've got the guy, I've got the friend who brings a bottle of booze, which is very dangerous for me.
Yeah, the other one you get is you always have a friend who's obsessed with nips.
Yes.
They, you know, the guy's got, he always has like 40 nips in his bag. You're like, what the fuck?
It's like, they're like, yeah, they're just nips, but then it's like bite-sized candy bars where just because you eat like 40,000 bite-sized candy bars doesn't mean they're any less of candy bars.
100%. It'll be like, oh, every time somebody makes a birdie, we'll just do a round
just
of the nips.
Nip.
And it's like next that you've taken like seven shots by the time you play nine holes. You're like, what is going on here, dude? The fuck? So we've all got those friends. That's my best advice. I think we nailed that question, to be honest with you.
I think so, too. I mean, I feel like everybody kind of does the same thing, but I don't want people to feel too bad if you're bringing out, like, 25 beers. Like, that's just how it works on a golf course.
No, that's the move. And it's, I mean, we give this answer quite a bit, but it's also dependent. I mean, if you're playing, like, a really nice private track with, like, you know, your significant other's dad or something, like, probably don't want to pack your bag full
everything
of 20
is,
beers.
You know, everything is situation, everything is scenario. The golf course I have in my head back home in Cedar Rapids is not, like, a nice course where you're bringing out like 25 beers.
No, the general muni that a lot of us are playing, you know, on Saturday morning with the guys at 10 or 11 a.m. where it's like, you know, $50 plus a cart fee, and you get your run of the place, you can pretty much do whatever the fuck you want to the golf course. That's the place where you pop in, you buy a couple Natty Lights or Bud Lights, and then you bring the rest, and like I said, stuff your bag to the point where it basically falls apart because you put so many beers in it.
Just rips everywhere. You don't have any place for balls or tees.
100%.
Yeah.
All right, this weekend we've got the Dell Technologies up at TPC Boston. Again, I know a lot of you guys are going to be out there.
My pal Riggs has a big weekend.
I've got a big weekend. This is going to be the first time in a long time I haven't been to the event at TPC Boston, formerly the Deutsche Bank. Dell Technologies is not going to be happy probably that I said that.
Probably not.
But whatever. I do think, though, I was doing a little math in my head. Watch out, folks.
Okay.
And
Harvard guy.
I think I'm going to be 5 hours ahead of y'all, which means, you know, for dinner time when I'm throwing back a couple pints over in the UK.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be able to catch on the TV at the bar.
There you go.
The end of, you know, the what's going to be the Sunday and Monday rounds.
Okay.
So
you're getting the best of both worlds.
So I've got this really cool vision in my head where I'm playing all these Sweet Links courses, 36 holes a day, buzz into one of the little pubs right by the course there, have dinner, couple pints, and boom, the golf's on, and I'm watching PGA Tour golf back home.
In these last couple of weeks, I've taken a lot of shit for doing things by myself, so I'm very proud of you for going by yourself.
For just going by myself to
playing golf. How can people follow you during your trip?
At Riggs Barstool on Twitter, probably even more prevalent is going to be at Riggs Barstool on the Instagram machine. I've basically been saving up my Instagrams. I mean, I've posted quite a few here and there, but it's really my game slowed down in the last couple weeks because I'm trying to save room on my Instagram page for the flood of fucking stuff that's going to come to people.
Going to be a lot of quarter zips on there, I would imagine.
Quarter zip season is hot. I almost have too many at this point. And the other thing that I keep kind of forgetting is that it's just a four-day trip.
Yeah.
So it's like, how much shit can you wear in 4 days?
True. That is true. But you can, like, in between, you're playing two rounds a day, you, like, switch in between.
My brother goes, you might have to change outfits between nine holes every time.
Oh, there you go. Between nine holes, even more. Just outfit change every once in a while. I don't hate that.
Yeah, knock on wood, but the forecast literally looks like the greatest forecast I've ever seen. It's, you know, everybody talks about the rain and the wind and the shitty weather that you get over there. It is forecasted to be like 64 degrees and sunny with partly cloudy and like 10% chance of rain the whole time I'm there.
Perfect.
It's early.
Yeah.
So again, knock on wood, knock on whatever superstitious spiritual shit you got to knock on, but it's looking good right now.
All right. Well then, I mean, you're set up for a very, very nice trip, very nice weekend.
We're going to have a huge show next week. We're going to be debriefing my trip.
Yep.
We're going to be halfway through the FedEx Cup. We're going to be a couple weeks out from the President's Cup. It's a good time. It's a lot going on. Like I said, next week's show will be out on Wednesday, not Tuesday, and it's going to be a big one. Probably going to be super long. Probably going to have all kinds of sweet stories, sweet stuff to talk about, and a great guest lined up. So that's it. That's all I got.
Hit it hard.
Hit it hard. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid of nothing. It's a natural fact.
People would have given up by now. All the rough I've seen, these ups and downs. Somehow I just keep on playing through. So all you critics, pull up a chair. At the winner's circle soon, I'll be there with a high five and a smile for you. Hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding. Trying to tell me how to live my life. These lawyers and strings spending money like my ex-wives. Sure, I gamble and I drink and smoke three packs a day. Hell, ain't country music supposed to be this way? It's from the heart, man. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. I hit it hard, I hit it, I hit it, I hit it hard. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid of nothing, it's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. keep hitting it hard, man. How about you?